Tonight on The Download, Chicago fiction writer Christine Sneed, Chicago filmmaker Maria Finizzo, and The Daily Line's Mike Boucher. And now here's your host, a man who has a hole in every pair of shoes he owns, Justin Kaufman.
That's not an exaggeration. I have a hole in every pair of shoes that I have. It's maddening. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. It is true. I do have holes in all of my shoes. It's crazy. I consider myself to be a well-kept guy. I like, once in a while to get a new collared shirt, keep the undergarments in rotation. I feel good, But for some reason, I just found this out today. The whole heel of the shoes that I've been wearing have completely broken open, and I am in danger of the entire bottom part of my shoe falling off.
Do you think it might be the way you're walking? It's putting extra wear and tear.
Much swagger?
Yeah, indeed.
Well, the worst part is that, I'm not really in the game for me. And we talked about this on the show. We talked about how my summer boat shoe had a hole on the top of it and I duct taped it. And I'm going to duct tape these, I guess. But, these are summer shoes. We're getting ready for fall. I'm not going to wear these coming up here, in the next couple weeks. It's going to turn and, So I'm not looking to replace them. I'm not going to go DSW tomorrow and do that. But the worst part is the shoes that I have for the fall, the sort of more like hiking boot style, cool kind of, it's cooler than a hiking boot. I want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
They have a hole in it. A hole in which the same, like on the heel, where the heel has like ripped, like the rubber has like cracked, And I remember in the spring going, I'm not going to wear these anymore. Here comes the summer. Now here I am going, I need to replace my summer shoes. I'll just go back to the boots. And they've got a hole in them too. So I have to go to this weekend. If you're in the western suburbs, you will find me scouring the Oak Brook shopping mall for new shoes.
Well, I think this might be a time to get a new summer shoe because they're probably on sale.
Yeah, right.
And then what about going to a cobbler?
Yeah, maybe.
Just like fixing the heel.
Yeah. My wife says it's my fault in the first place. She says that I have a penchant. This may be true, and if you're listening out there, maybe you agree. But I may be considered a cheapskate when it comes to shoes. So if there is a decision between a $25 pair and a $60 pair, I'm going $25.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened with the boat shoe. I went with the $25, and then it created a hole in the canvas that I had to duct tape. The ones that I have on now are the same thing. When I go to DSW, I'll spread them out. My wife will say, I'll try these, and I'll say, these are $85. I'm not, dude, what are we made of money? And I go, $35 is it's a perfect number four pair of shoes. And now I pay the price. Pay the price that to be fair, this is the second summer. So it's the end of the second summer that they're breaking.
Oh, so you
got. But I feel like I'm perpetually going to be a seventh grader who believes you should hold your shoes for 3-4 years. I don't remember shoes being this, breaking down this fast.
I think a seventh grader, they go through shoes every year because they're growing.
23-year-old.
Yeah. I think if you spend a decent amount of money, I think you expect a couple of years. But if you just want, some throwaway shoes that you're only going to wear from season to season, that's fine spending that little of amount.
Yeah.
What about, you just had a birthday, you got Christmas coming up, ask for some shoes.
That's a weird thing to ask for, though. If you're going to say, can I get some? Because don't you want to pick the shoes out? Right? Am I the only one who would want to pick a shoe? I would not want to be like, I know this is something you do in your family. You told me before that someone in your family always gets you shoes for Christmas. But I don't know, man. I would be like, oh, thanks for the Andre Agassi kicks.
It's not
really my style.
See, I'm fortunate enough to have a stylish family in that I don't. I trust, I put my right. fashion sense into their hands, and they dress me on a daily basis.
See, I do that too, but I veto the cost. Mm. You know, so I'll be like, oh, this is nice. And, oh, it's $80. No. Who do you think I am? This is crazy. Who's asking for $120 for shoes? Hey, everybody, come here. I want to talk to you. That's what I do. I turn into like a cynical stand-up comic at the shoe store talking about the price, trying to get everybody to nod in agreement with me. Look at how crazy this is. This is way too much money. They want $200 for these. Am I right, everybody, huh? That's what I end up doing. So anyway, I got to get some new shoes, man. And so maybe that's something I'll do this weekend.
Why are you going to the western suburbs?
Well, I want to go see that art installation at the Elmhurst Art Museum.
Oh, okay.
The one with the inflatables. Mm-hmm. You see this?
Yeah.
They're going to be on the show, and I want to see it first. And, and I figure since we're out there.
Out that way. Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, news, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Roger Badish. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. Let's get the show kicked off with the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. It's official. The city council passed a water tax. It passed 40-10. The mayor praised aldermen for doing what's right to fund pensions, in which 40 of the aldermen responded by saying, what? I'm up. What I miss? What's going on? Still no word on what happens in 2023 when the pension liability is more than this tax brings in. But for now, it's time to turn on the Lionel Richie and yacht party all night long. All night. Yeah. So now the hackers have gone after former Secretary of State Colin Powell. They released some of his personal emails where he takes shot at his Republican counterparts like Donald Rumsfeld, but also Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So why is this news for a former Secretary of State? I mean, if there were emails in there that said, you know, that he was thinking about an interesting storyline before he went to the UN, that's fair game. But just publicly releasing his shade emails? What is that? Is that how we're going to roll in society now? If so, I'd like to apologize in advance to my mom. I'm sorry. You know what? Sometimes you're just too much, and I need to vent. Besides, your other son started it. Also, in other email-related cases, the Illinois Attorney General says that all Chicago police officers' emails, even personal, are public. This is being challenged by the police union and others because, well, you know why. The emails in question are from officers involved in the Laquan McDonald case. You know what? I got to go on record here. I don't like this trend at all. Police officers should be able to use their Earthlink accounts to forward mass emails about Obama just like the rest of us, right? I mean, hey, that's the American way. You know, we're going to find out with all of this email news, everything from these hacks to the police to the Clintons. It's just going to be one big elaborate promotion for the new movie Snowden. You just watch. It's experiential marketing. Donald Trump was cut off by a Flint, Michigan pastor during a visit to a local church. He started to rail on Hillary Clinton, and she told him, hey, that's not what you were invited here to talk about. He then just talked about his one friend he hates named Jillery. You know, my friend Jillery. Speaking of Jillery, hey, they're about to remove the yellow flag on her health and let her back on the campaign trail. Vroom, vroom. I wonder what she was doing when she wasn't campaigning, right? My guess, tons of YouTube videos, binge-watching Scandal, playing words with friends. The only image I have in my head is just like a ton of dirty Kleenex, like all over the house. Ugh, gross. Can't wait to have you back, Hill. Trump announced his health details on the Dr. Oz show, which airs tomorrow. He's 267 pounds, and he doesn't exercise. Next. Pittsburgh's going to be the first American city that will bring automated Uber vehicles to the streets. Can't wait for the road rage. The Steelers lose and you get caught off by a driverless car. Oh, it's going to get all Incredible Hulk up in here. I mean, ripping off hoods like it's Total Recall. In weather, I thought it was supposed to be bad today. It's beautiful. This is the cold spell. Looking ahead, nothing but 70s for the next week and a half. It's like sensory deprivation, like being in a nice warm bath of salt water. In sports, the Cubs beat the Cards today behind a wonderful outing from John the Bald Eagle Lester, and that means that the Cubs' magic number is down to 1.
Yep, they head back to Wrigley to take on the Brewers for a four-game set. The Cards head to San Francisco, so the guess is that the Cubs are going to clinch tomorrow. Maybe they can get Yosh Kawana out of retirement to put the plastic tarps over the new clubhouse furniture, because you know it's going to get messy. Ha-ha! Can't wait. Tomorrow, Mike, the Candyman Montgomery, takes the mound for possible history. The White Sox have played spoiler, I guess, and won two straight at home against the Indians, but they only care about the dogs down at the Cell, which the Sox broke a Guinness Book World Record for most dogs at a baseball game or something. Very exciting September baseball, guys. Real exciting. Yeah. The Bears getting ready for Monday Night Football, their home opener against the Eagles. Interesting stats. Cutler is actually great on Monday Night Football. He's also got a good record in his career versus the Eagles. And the Bears get a rookie QB in Carson Wentz. So Bears at home, Cutler on Monday night, and facing a rookie QB means the Bears are a 3-point favorite. Hey, all right. Things are looking up. Super Bowl. Yeah. 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 Some Bulls news for you. New center Robin Lopez was on stage with Mariah Carey in Las Vegas last night. She called him up, blindfolded him, and tickled him with a feather, all during the song Touch My Body. I mean, say what you will about the performance, but I'd much rather watch that than NBA Summer League, right? Way to go. Wow, our center's kind of like a sex pot or something. He kind of looks like Sideshow Bob, but in a sexy way. And finally tonight, the city council passed an ordinance today cracking down on party buses. Yep, the trolleys and buses that will take passengers from bar to bar have been too rowdy and too irresponsible, prompting complaints. Now it's up to the driver to keep the passengers in line, or that driver's going to face a fine. I can't wait to see how this plays out when the driver tases a bachelorette party. Let's remember which alderman voted for this, okay? Because the blood of the bachelorette party, it's on their hands. That's the carryout for September 14, 2016. Hey, we got a surplus on napkins. So 50 to 100 napkins for every order. Yeah, we good? Yay!
It's so true. There's going to be so many tases. Tasing's gone wild. It's going to be a new show. Live from the party bus. Coming up, Mike Fouché from the Daily Line is going to join us about the big water tax pass today and other news in City Council. It's a download. Don't go anywhere. 720 WGN. All right, Mike Fouché coming up after the news. Rob, you ready for tonight?
Oh, man. I was up like all night, research, digging, looking into backgrounds. I can't wait. Another round of picnic.
Another picnic. Anthony Rizzo tonight at 10 o'clock. Matt Klein will be here. It's going to be a good night.
Should be.
Tomorrow's going to be clinch day. How about that? I feel bad for Pete Zimmerman because Pete has tickets to Saturday's game, and I just don't know how the Cubs lose two games and the Cardinals lose two games to put him in a position where he's going to get a clinch day on Saturday.
It's going to be tough. Yeah. The odds are against him.
Yeah.
But we can. But we'll hope. I'll pull for him.
The good news is you get to see some of the call-ups, right? Some of the September call-ups who don't get a chance to play, maybe out of position.
Jung Ho Soo being called up from quadruple A Texas.
You know, the crouton kid, Matt Caesar's going to pitch three innings on Saturday. That's going to be great. So. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me now, as he is every Wednesday night, Mike Fouché from the Daily Line. Joined us last night for a sneak peek. We got to, I felt very like I was just flipping channels on the TV.
Yeah, right.
Seeing somebody else's.
And life. Then you land on me.
And we landed
and
on
you. Land on me doing a panel discussion about why taxes are so terrible in Chicago and everybody's screwed.
Was it good? Was it a good time?
It was a great time. It was a terrific time. We had a terrific panel. We had guys from Mike Reaver from the Chicago Chamber. We had Brian Bernardoni from the Chicago Realtors Association. We had Craig Chico, who runs the original neighborhood organization
back
created in the
1930s.
Yards, the Back of the Yards Neighborhood Council. He was sharp. And, you know, they've got some really interesting things going on in the Back of the Yards.
Did they fix the ills that face us in the city of Chicago?
Yeah, it's all done. So everybody go home. It's cool. Summer vacation is back. because everything's solved.
The Lionel Richie, you hit the all night long at the yacht party going?
That's right. It was good. I played that song afterwards.
Speaking of yacht parties, let's talk about the water tax. It does pass today.
Wow, what a segue.
40 to 10.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I could always say, and I feel like journalists say this all the time, like, well, it would have been, that's better than it was 10 years ago. It would have been 50 to nothing. But 40 to 10 is still a landslide. Talk about the water tax. Had anything changed in the language, in the ordinance, in anything from the time we talked last week?
There was never really any controversy among aldermen, or there was never really any debate whether or not this was going to pass. Because the deal is that this is to help pay for this massive, raging debt that we've created by not putting in enough money into the municipal employees pension. It's $18.9 billion. And the water tax is supposed to help us get there for the next few years. And we'll keep paying into it. But the thing is the payment plan that the mayor's folks have come up with is it ramps up over time. And there's a fairly steep ramp. We're going from paying $160 million this last year to $300 and something million the next year. And then by 2020, it gets up to $800 million. But hey, it doesn't stop there. By around 2030, it gets up to $1 billion a year that we're paying.
And
at 2057, it's $2 billion.
Well, and this was the old adage of kicking the can down the road that, you know, the politicians who are making the leaders who are making those choices now to ramp up in a small risk, they won't be around in 2040, so somebody else is pale to care.
Right, exactly. Who cares, right? It's just our kids.
Which is why we're here today.
Right.
Because back in 2000 and 1995, we were making the same decisions. Saying, oh my God, 20 years.
Nobody cares. Don't worry about it.
We won't even be flying robots, automated
and
cars.
And, you know, this is actually a really interesting thing that Bobby Otter from the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability last night at our panel made, which is, hey, look, we're looking at these paths where we're going to be paying in money. That's great. But what if there's a recession? And if there's a recession, that's going to just throw everything out of whack. You know, in 2008, we thought everything was cool. It had been growth, growth, growth. And then there was a recession. And then we really hit a bump
and people
for 5 years.
People will point to that recession as a reason why these pension payments got out of whack in the first place, because we started to scale back and use money for different
purposes. So to get back to how this all happened is the aldermen never really felt like they had a choice. The mayor never really came with a separate plan. And, you know, aldermen aren't really going to be the guys who are going to say, you know what, we really need is a tax that's four times that size, which is actually kind of the truth.
But that's my point. I mean, that's what John Arena was saying on the show last Thursday. We had him on last week, last Thursday, and he said he'd much rather be in a situation where we all were frank and honest and said that this, because by 2023, this is unfunded. I mean, this is not going to cover anymore.
He's not the only guy.
And so he's one of the 10 that, that voted against it. But the idea being, let's step up as a city, as leaders in this municipality, which is the same as municipalities around the country, but be leaders that say it's got to start now, not in 10 years.
This is one of the things that's the great mystery about how Rahm Emanuel is running this, which is that actually last night at our panel, Mike Reaver from the Chicagoland Chamber, which is a lot of the businesses in town, and then Brian Bernadoni from the Chicagoland Realtors, which is a lot of developers in town, they both said, look, rather than nickel and diming us for all these little things, why don't you just come to us and say it's going to be $2 and just do it. Just get it done so that there's some certainty and we know what it is that we're going to be dealing with for the next 25, 30 years.
Some of them keep coming
back to the table.
Political.
So the business people are saying this. It's not just guys like John Arena. It's not just the progressives. It's the rock rib Republican business folks in town that are saying
it too. Astute political observers would also say that 2023, the year that that this money doesn't cost anymore, is also an election year.
Well, who cares?
Maybe why it's down the line saying we ain't going to be here anymore.
Well, you know, the current plan, we're kind of going up a little bit, and then it doesn't really go up until 2020.
After the 2019 election. Yeah. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio with us tonight. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the O'Hare bond vote, which is very interesting because this was the minority alderman black caucus were
nail biter today.
They said, you know what, we don't want to give you money for the bond because of the way you treat workers.
Yeah.
Something that should be routine was difficult to get through.
So
we'll get through and see if that passed, and also talk about police reforms and a little election news coming up here with Mike Fouché. Stay with us. Cool like that.
Cool like that.
Mike Fouché, Daily Line in studio here on 720 WGN. We're talking about city council. And I have to say, it's so nice to have him back in session because when they come back in session,
all the weird comes out.
The protesters come out. You know?
And, okay, and, protesters. Yeah.
Well, there's weird, too. There's the weird, there's the proclamations, and then there's also the protesters.
Yeah.
Today, that was no exception. This was over police reform.
Yeah.
Essentially saying that the all the stuff that Rahm Emanuel is putting out about police reform is no good.
This group, the Community Renewal Society, which is a faith-based organization, you know, you'd think they're kind of tame. They had a press conference, and they started off by singing a hymn in the press conference, and then they just got rolling. They were upset about how the mayor's police reform is going and the ordinance that the mayor's put out, and they said, look, the mayor's ordinance has got no teeth. And then everyone in the group pulls out these wind-up chattering teeth. And so they're like, the mayor's reform has no teeth. And then they start chanting, no teeth, no justice. And it was great. It was fantastic.
It was great.
It was one of the better, funnier things I've seen. And so then they really brought it up a notch. They all decide that they're going to go deliver the teeth to city council because city council has no teeth. And this is while the city council meeting is going on. And they start charging, going down the hallway into the city council chambers. Which, by the way, at that very moment, the former president of Ireland was giving a speech, Mary Fitzgerald. And so the Chicago police were not going to let that happen. Right. And there was this scrum going on with pastors in their collars and yelling and screaming and Chicago police officers. The police officers did not let them through. They were pretty strong guys. And, you know, it kind of ended at that. But it was probably one of the more interesting and, you know, more belligerent protests I've seen. That, you know, this stuff with police reform in Chicago and city council, it's really getting heated.
We should see some movement on that coming up as well.
They're going to have a special council meeting on the 29th.
So, all right. So the other big story that came out and it kind of went away, but today it came back again, was the idea of O'Hare bonds. And this is something that just
so sleepy sounding, right?
It's something that never gets challenged.
Please put me to sleep. Never, never. It just goes right through. There's never any challenges, never any problems. And what happened today is that actually there are the Black Caucus united together along with a number of other aldermen saying that O'Hare Airport has not had enough minority contractors. There aren't enough people of color that are holding jobs at O'Hare Airport.
And the jobs and Midway Airport. They're being abused.
And they're being abused. And it's basically a patronage factory. And they're very upset about it. And so it actually went down to the wire. There were three people who had abstained that weren't going to be voting on it. And then you kept hearing no, 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 no in order to pass the bonds. And they need these bonds in order to keep functioning. And then ultimately it came down to 26-21, which is probably the closest vote we've seen yet. You know, that it still passed, but it's probably the closest vote we've seen yet. And, you know, the mayor was clearly not pleased about that. In the press conference that we had afterwards, there were some questions about him, what he thought about it. And he really tried to ignore it. He didn't want to even talk about it.
He acted like it wasn't even a thing.
He said, you know, I don't want to talk about the politics of this. And really, honest to gosh, it's not politics.
For once, it's close. It's 26-21. Yeah. This is what we want you to talk about when there's actually a contentious vote in city council, which is rare.
Yeah, yeah. So, and actually, to his credit, the mayor said that the people who are upset about this really have an earnest concern and that he is going to try and do something about it. We'll see what happens. This is something that has been building and building and building in city council. Minority contractors for city projects is something that there's a lot of concern about. Among the Black and Latino caucus.
So we get the bonds. So
the airport keeps functioning.
The airport's fine.
Doesn't shut down.
But that's a
real deal.
A real deal. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio with us tonight, as he is every Wednesday night at dailyline.net.
That's it.
All right. So let's wrap up here talking about today on the WGN Plus podcast, The Chicago Way with John Cass.
Yeah.
Jeff Carlin, I think it's either on the site or it's going to be on tonight.
Right.
John Cass is going to write it up as well for the paper. He had guest Senator Kwame Raoul in talking about politics and the elections coming up, and they asked about Mayor Emanuel. And Kwame Raoul said that Mayor Emanuel will be contested. He will be challenged as a Democrat to Democrat for mayor of Chicago in 2019.
You know, I don't think the among people in politics in Chicago, that is not a surprise. You know, there's already a number of people that are warming things up. You've got Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor, who from the north side, who clearly wants to run, and she's talking about it, and donors are talking about it. Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart, he's taken a hard look at it again. And if you see what Tom Dart's up to, he's showing up in every parade in town. He's doing a lot of handshaking. That's not something he needs to do. You know, he'll win re-election
for sheriff.
Mike,
is that how it works? I mean, if you start to see in the next year or so people showing up at pancake breakfasts and parades, it's like, oh, I'm here for parade.
Yeah, what's he for? You know, what's he here for? I don't know.
So I really like Lockies. You're going to come out to this parade.
Expect it. You know, the city treasurer, Kurt Summers, he has been building an operation. He's got a group of people. He's already got a team. He's got a fundraiser. He's got a communications person. He is building an operation. He's very serious. This is way more than any previous city treasurer. And he's trying to rack up some things that he's accomplished in order to show that he's done. And when you talk to African-American leaders in Chicago and you say, who's going to be the black candidate for mayor? Kurt Summers, no doubt. And I think that there is an active effort among black leaders, major black donors in Chicago, in order to gather behind one candidate. Because the black political community in Chicago, one thing that they know is that one of the reasons there's been a failure to have a strong black candidate or a successful black candidate is the black community hasn't united behind one person since Harold Washington. I mean, there was talk way back in 1999 about Bobby Rush, and then in 2003 there was talk about Jesse Jackson Jr., but neither one of those ever really came together. So I think that there's going to be a real serious race, at least one candidate, but probably, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw three or four.
Now, I was going to say, the names that you've mentioned, are any of them in the same political family as a Chuy García and the progressive movement that we saw force the mayor to a runoff? Those are different candidates.
Chuy García came out of nowhere. I mean,
the progressive sort of that, you know, they wanted Karen Lewis for a little bit.
Then
that's not a Kirk Summer. There
hasn't been a real progressive group. One of the things about liberals is that liberals have a really hard time getting around a single cause. The first thing that a bunch of liberals will do when they get together is have a fight about what they're really fighting about. And so, I mean, that's the absolute truth. Hey, liberal friends, you know, you all know that this is true. I think that there is no progressive organization, and there's no Chicago no longer has lakefront liberals. Those are gone. Mm-hmm. 43rd Ward is no longer a liberal ward. 44th Ward is no longer a liberal ward. So I think it's much more scattered than that.
All right. There you hear it here. We'll see you next Wednesday, Mike. Mike Fouché from the dailyline.net joins us every Wednesday here on the Download to talk Illinois politics. Thanks, Mike.
Good to be here.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Like I said, coming up at 9 o'clock, we're going to talk about the film Those Left Behind, which is going to be at the Siskel Center this Saturday. Maria Finizzo, who's a great award-winning, Peabody Award-winning director, has mostly done documentaries in her life, and she turned to a feature film, Those Left Behind. It's a really emotional movie about suicide. It is really, really good. I saw it today, and we're going to talk to her about that transition from documentary work to feature films and talk as well about the tagline to that movie, which is really about before there are beginnings there, or there needs to be an end before there's beginnings. So we'll talk with Maria about that. Also tonight, Picnic, we're giving nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Tonight, Anthony Rizzo. This is the one we've been waiting for, folks. 312-981-7200. I know Rob Martier is already researching. He's been researching all day. He's ready to go with his choices for the nickname for Anthony Rizzo. So that's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is a Chicago novelist and fiction writer. Christine Sneed just published a new collection of short stories called The Virginity of Famous Men. In it, she explores the world of modern romance, power, celebrity, and, of course, loneliness. Can't have a book about love without loneliness. The collection is getting great reviews, including one from the Chicago Tribune. Sneed's an award-winning author. She was given the Chicago Writers Association Book of the Year Award. She received the Grace Paley Prize for Short Fiction. This is her second collection of short stories. Her first, Portraits of a Few of the People I've Made Cry. Christine Sneed lives in Evanston, where she's the faculty director of the MFA in Creative Writing Program at Northwestern University, and she's my guest tonight at the big table. Christine, nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you so much, Justin.
Loved the book. Loved it. I read the whole thing. I was like, I feel like today with this book, which is, you know, which is wonderful, and also Maria's film, I got a dose of emotion. I got a lot of it. Let's talk about this, because, you know, I kind of say, and you kind of, I don't think bristle's the right word when I say it's, you know, it's a modern book. It's a book about modern romance, and that includes loneliness. I felt like that was part of it, but you might push back on that.
You know, it's funny because I was talking with a friend earlier, and she also was saying that, oh, the characters are very lonely, and I thought, you know, I actually think they're having a good time. Some of them, not all of them, but it's really been interesting to hear the way that some readers have perceived the stories, and I'm glad that you guys are seeing things that I'm not necessarily seeing or thinking about at least when I was writing them, I wasn't thinking about that so much.
You've been working on this collection for almost a decade. In some cases, some of these stories go back. Talk about bringing this book to life, this collection to life. What was it about these stories that made it into this collection?
Well, one thing that's been really interesting as I read story collections from other writers and also just look at responses from readers, either in online forums like Goodreads or on Amazon, they often want linked collections and with a common theme or a character who is, you know, someone who reappears in several stories.
I see, like callbacks and things like that.
Yeah, and I really was mostly interested in picking stories that I thought worked together in sort of a sensibility, you know, just that they had a similar feel to them, but also ones that I have other stories that I published in journals but didn't collect in this collection. And I just was most interested in picking stories that I felt were maybe the best ones that I've written in the last 10 years. So, and I also work with my editor, Nancy Miller, who is I think she's the editorial director at Bloomsbury, and she and I just had a couple of conversations about the contents and took some stuff out and put some new stories in place of the ones that we removed.
Well, the book may not have a necessary theme, although you do recall characters from past works, Ren being one that shows up in the book. But, you know, it may be less about modern romance and more about relationships, because it feels like each one of these stories surrounds a main character that is having a conflict, a moment that sort of that moment in their relationship, whether it's their spouse leaving or whether it's meeting a new, you know, person or even the relationship between a mom and their son. I mean, it really does sort of revolve around the sort of conflict of a relationship.
I think that's always been a focus, is how do people relate to each other? But more importantly, what are the things that drive them apart? Because that's where you're going to find the story and the tension between the characters that'll create, you know, some degree of suspense in the narrative. And so I'm really interested in the flaws and the weaknesses that we have. And then that's something that I try to reflect honestly when I'm writing a story. And so those, you know, those foibles are where I find my material.
Yeah, to look at the things that drive us apart, that might be the feeling that I feel when I say loneliness. Because there is something in all these stories that it is this moment where you're just like, it's just like it feels like something's unraveling or it's out of somebody's control. Or they're having points of epiphany where they're like, this is not the life I wanted to live, or, you know, this is not how I saw, you know, this relationship working.
Yeah, I think one thing that happens, and it's just something that we all have to deal with one way or another if we get involved with someone, is we eventually do change, and we sometimes get bored, or we, you know, become interested in things that our partner finds, you know, threatening to the relationship. And so those, you know, those periods of change, and also just the stress that comes with being in a long-term relationship, that's always been material that I really like to explore. And whether it's a romantic relationship, or in the case of, you mentioned the story with the mother and the son, the story Beach Vacation, they've known each other their whole lives, and so they have a very deep relationship, but it's also full of conflict because, you know, they're no one knows them better than the two of them, and of course the son's father. But he's off stage in that story.
Well, that story in particular, talking about that. I mean, that relationship is one that I think a lot of people can relate to, especially if they have teenagers. You know,
yeah.
It was really about
yeah.
a son who doesn't really have respect for his mom anymore, and isn't necessarily she's wondering where that went, and everything she tries, and whatever which way she tries, it just is fleeting. And, you know, it's sad, and it's sad because, you know, you never want to see that kind of relationship play out, you know, between a mother and a son. But it is reality. That is what happens at certain points.
When I first sat down to write that story, I thought it was going to be a happy story. And I thought it was mainly going to be about the fact that this mother was aware of the fact that women were noticing her son, who's extremely good looking. And so that is threatening to her because she doesn't want to think of her son as, you know, a man in the way that other women do. And that was the impetus for the story. But then I realized, as I write the story, I'm much more interested in the fact that he's spoiled and that she is aware of the fact that she was complicit in his being spoiled. Like she and her husband were giving him things and maybe he didn't have to work hard. And so that became something that I ended up focusing on, which I had not planned initially. So that was fun. It was fun for me.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the characters. We can talk about the characters and constructing those characters and how you do that and how long they live in your head and all the things that go along with creating so many characters for a short story collection. The collection is called The Virginity of Famous Men. The author is Christine Sneed. She's got a book release party tomorrow night at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston. She's also going to be at Women and Children's First in Chicago and Andersonville on September 21st. And then on October 5th, she'll be at City Lit. Christine Sneed, my guest tonight at the big table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking modern relationships, romance, power, loneliness, all of it in between, with Christine Sneed. She's the author of The Virginity of Famous Men, which is just out, a collection of short stories. You can see her tomorrow night. She's going to be at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston as the book release party. Christine Sneed is also the faculty director of MFA and Creative Writing Program at Northwestern, as well as an award-winning author. I mean, when you put together a collection of short stories, it really is a collection of characters. There are a lot of characters. Each short story focuses on a main character, in some cases two, because of the relationship. Is that the way you prefer to write, this kind of a way where you're showcasing several characters as opposed to one story over, you know, chapter after chapter after chapter of the same character?
You know, I really do prefer to write short stories as opposed to novels. But one thing that novels allow you to do is the form is pretty forgiving. My first novel, Little Known Facts, has 8 point of view characters, and there's several chapters that I published as short stories. So it is pretty forgiving. And there's precedent, certainly. There's a lot of books like Winesburg, Ohio, and A Visit from the Goon Squad, and Olive Kitteridge, two books that I really love. And those novels, which I think the authors even probably, I've heard Jennifer Egan say that she thinks of A Visit from the Goon Squad, or she thought of it as a story collection initially. But they found enough of a connecting theme to call it a novel. And publishing, they really want you to write novels in New York. Yeah.
Why? Why do they want? Just because it's easier to sell, or what's
Yes, exactly. Yeah, really? I mean, it's...
Because you could turn it into a movie.
Yeah.
But you've got like 15 little movies here, right?
And actually, there's plenty of short stories that have been made into film. And I think readers also have been, you know, brainwashed into thinking, oh, it has to be a novel. But, you know, ironically, every single year, the Best American Short Stories anthology, that is a bestseller every year. So I don't know if it's because college students are buying it for workshops, but there are plenty of readers who are, you know, just casual readers who buy it, too. So I think, I don't know. I mean, I really like stories because the compression of the form, you can do a lot with 20 or 30 pages, and I feel like it's not going to go off the rails the way a novel will.
And what I really enjoy about the short story, and yours in particular, is that, you know, you can end with little mini moments. You don't have to take a short story and wrap it up and say, well, the mother and son, they ended up not liking each other forever, and then we look back and forth. You know, like, it's this mini moment that the reader can reflect when the last word is on the page. And it seems to be fulfilling without having this sort of, you know, this trite beginning, middle, end that a novel has to have.
Well, one thing that, I mean, with stories or just character-driven fiction rather than plot-driven. Plot-driven is, you know, the genre, like mysteries and thrillers and fantasy. The characters, I forgot what I was going to say now. Oh, no. We're talking about character arc, but...
instead of, like, plot genre stuff...
what it was.
Go ahead.
One thing about our experience on, you know, on the planet is we don't often get answers and we don't always get the resolutions that we want. So one thing with good fiction, I think, it shows us what our world is like. Writers who I really admire write with precision about everyday life, and they do not give us easy answers because we don't get them usually. So ever, I mean, maybe once in a while someone will say something or you'll have the moment to say what you really think about an experience or a person mm-hmm. who's done something that, you know, made an impression on you. But most of the time we don't get the resolution that we get with a Hollywood film.
Yeah, so, absolutely right. And I would say, you know, with your stories, and let's get into it, where do these characters come from? I mean, let's take, for instance, the two women in the call center. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the names of the shirts.
Words That Once Shocked Us.
Of course. but two, you know, they're in a call center. You know, where do these characters come from in your mind?
You know, I can't even say with any accuracy where they come from, but I think just it's often just a situation, and then I try to hear a voice that seems to be the right voice for the point of view. And in that story, it's a first-person narrator, so her voice arrived within the first couple of sentences that I wrote. And from there, the other characters just arrive, too. And Rachel, the young woman who's married and who is thinking about having an affair. And
with someone who calls into the call center for the shampoo call-in center. Right.
And Marcy, the older woman who's the narrator of the story, is, of course, appalled by this. And also she's divorced and her husband left her for someone else. So she has very conflicted feelings and about Rachel's, you know, potential extramarital adventure. So I just, you know, I didn't know when I started the story that it was going to be about that exact situation, but it evolved as I wrote the draft. Marcy was really, and just the monotony of working day after day with strangers on the phone and having to give them sort of, you know, canned lines all the time because you have a script if you're working in a call center. And I just thought that would be a job that I would, if you want to torture me, that can be the job. So I really admire people who are able to work in call centers because it has to be a difficult job for so many reasons.
Well, there were three categories, and I don't remember the first two, but the third category was about the lonely hearts, the people who are calling in because they just want to connect to somebody. They don't necessarily care about the product. They want to know about the people behind it. But there was something about that longing and that need for connection that when you talked about not necessarily having a theme, I felt like it was a theme. That is what this book is about, this need for connection and as you said, like sort of examining why that doesn't happen.
You're right. I really do think that it's always these struggles that we all have to find someone who understands us and continues to understand us and support us. And often those relationships don't last. Aside from family, and even that, I mean, family's obviously very difficult for most of us. I mean, we all have expectations of each other. And so I'm just very interested in how each of us, and then what I can write, I can make it up. I mean, I'm not writing autobiographical fiction. I'm really writing about people that I've invented, but they're based on just impressions that I've had from experiences. And those are just the idea of how do we really love someone and how do we sustain that love. That's always probably going to be something I'm going to write about.
We're going to take a quick break for the news to get an update on tonight's news. But that is what I want to talk to you about after, is about how, as a writer, as a fiction writer, you use your own experiences to understand relationships, communication, all the things that come out in these short stories. Because it's very, there's a lot of variety. I mean, it's not just, you know, the same stories over and over. You have a lot of different characters, a lot of different scenarios. and that has to come from somewhere. So how much you actually know about these situations and how much, you know, it's a fiction writing exercise. That's what we'll find out coming up after the news. Christine Sneed is my guest in studio. She's the author of The Virginity of Famous Men, a short story collection. She's going to be having her book party, her release tomorrow at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston. Also, she will be at Women and Children First in Andersonville on the 21st, and then at City Lit on October 5th. Much more to come with Christine Sneed here on The Big Table. Stay with us. Thank you, Rob. It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at The Big Table tonight, Christine Sneed. She's the author of The Virginity of Famous Men, a collection of short stories, which is out. Is it out now? I mean, it is now, right? The book release party is tomorrow in Evanston at the Bookends and Beginnings. She's also going to be at Women and Children First in Andersonville on the 21st and City Lit on October 5th. Christine, we're talking about the characters. You are a faculty director for the MFA in Creative Writing Program at Northwestern. You teach fiction writing. When you're developing a character, and I don't know a lot about this work, and I took, we were just talking about in the break that, you know, when I was a freshman in college, I took my fiction writing class. But do you come up with these scenarios and the situations first and then the characters, or do you build out a character and build a world around them?
Well, sometimes it's actually the title that I come up with first. And then from there, I will think of the character pretty quickly. And then the situation unfolds. I don't really plot the stories at all. When I've written the novels that I was writing, I did actually plot those out more. But even that was pretty loose. So the characters certainly come early. And the title sometimes is the first thing. And then the plot will unfold as I write. So, and again, with... I mentioned this earlier, with a 20 or 30 page story, it's, I don't get the same kind of flop sweat I get when I'm writing a 300 page novel. So I feel in a way that even though the form, it's a much shorter form, I feel that it's strangely more freeing, because if I screw it up, oh well, you know, it's not 300 pages in 3 years of my life. So that the pressure just is off in some ways. And I find that really freeing.
Do you find yourself poring over every word in a shorter story? Do you find yourself editing in a way that you're like changing adjectives and changing sentence structures and everything throughout the whole thing?
I do. And
really?
Even with the novels that I wrote, I'm probably just as meticulous, or I want to be. I hope I am being. It's just, yeah, every sentence, every word, I really weigh them carefully. I don't do it, you know, if I were going to weigh every single word as I write each word, then it would take me, you know, 5 years to write a story. But usually I'll look back on, if I write 500 words, the next day I'll go back and read those 500 words and edit them very scrupulously, and then write, I hope, another 500 words.
What's tremendous about this collection is it really is, it showcases so many different relationships, which we talked about right before the news, but so many different scenarios, whether it's, like we said, a mother-son relationship where the teenage son is losing all, I mean, it's just not showing any respect for his mom, and she's essentially losing her mind because of it. Or it's two coworkers who are in the call center, or it's a divorce that's happening with a celebrity. Or it's the sister-in-law that comes in and has a connection with the brother. I mean, there's so many different roles and relationships are in the book. Where do they come from? Are they things that you sort of conjure up from your own experiences in your life that you find a way to put to the page?
You know, I don't really take them from people that I know or things that I've experienced myself, but I think just, you know, listening to other people's stories, or maybe I'll see two people on the train one day and I'll sort of, what's their story? And then I start making up something. And that's often what, you know, gets me started. I'll see two people look at each other a certain way. Maybe one of them looks very angrily at the other one, or maybe I remember one time saw this young couple on the CTA. And they were clearly falling in love. And I just thought, that is the most intoxicating feeling, but it's also so scary. And I just think that's something that's really interesting to write about, is how does that change your personality? Or who do you try to be so that person will continue to fall in love with you?
What about that topic, you know, do you find yourself attracted to? Meaning, you know, you could write about anything. What is it about love and about that sort of intoxication and relationships that are featured in this book. What is it about this topic that draws you in as a writer?
Well, I think it certainly interests most of us. We, you know, most of us, if we're not in a relationship, we often want to be in a relationship, and it's sort of the gold standard, you know, of a fulfilled human life is to find a partner and to be with that person into perpetuity if possible, which, you know, it's often not possible. And that's another, you know, topic for a story, is just what happens when it starts to fall apart. And it's heartbreaking, but, you know, as we were talking earlier, you have to have the flaw and you have to have the tension to have the story. So that that is really a big motivator for me, is just to, how does this inform character? What do people do? What decisions do they make? Mm-hmm. Often not good ones, you know.
Well, I mean, there is something to be said about that the characters are flawed. They're you know, in some cases, you know, they're driven by their insecurities, or they're driven by the mistakes they've made in the past, and they can't get rid of them, and that's making the choices for essentially making the choice for them in some of your stories. So talk about that. I mean, you know, a lot of what we've talked about, I mean, a lot of character is about what their baggage is, what their flaws are, how they handle those flaws.
Well, you know, it's very easy for us to be nice people when things are going our way. And so character is really not revealed during those moments. It's when we don't get what we want, or we are frustrated, or we're angry, or we're disappointed. I have a friend from grad school who said, you know, who we are is truly based on our insecurities. The insecurities that drive our decisions and drive, you know, our relationships, and how much reassurance we need, and the jealousy that we all suffer from usually at some point. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of us are less jealous than others, but it's a really primal feeling. And so those moments when you're not getting what you want, how do you behave? And that's my characters. You know, I want to know, when they're under stress, what do they do?
I mean, that really does play out in these. I mean, you are at this sort of axis point of stress, where all these characters are at this point where they're like, you just get this feeling that they're like, as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview, that they are in this way, you know, when things are falling apart. This is the moment when things are falling apart. I mean, you could be a writer that talks or writes about the moment that it all comes together. You know, I mean, there are different ways to look at things. And I guess that's why I ask about, you know, why do you choose to write about this topic? Maybe it's, why do you choose to write about that stress, that moment when things fall apart?
You know, I think, like, a lot of the people who write romance novels, they're writing about the same things, but they have the happy ending. So as I said before, we don't have the resolution in our lives usually. I mean, we do have endings, and we have a lot of beginnings, fortunately, but our endings are not necessarily what we hoped for. And so that, you know, but they're opportunities. I mean, we can make the same mistake twice or three times or 60 times, but I think most of us want to do better. And, you know, the self-help market is right. Exploded a long time ago, right, but it continues to be a, you know, a robust market for publishers. So that the idea of self-improvement and, you know, exercise, diet, weight loss, all that stuff, we want to be better people. And so, but most of us probably, in a really honest moment, would say that we don't think we're good enough. And that is a really, that's a powerful thing. I mean, to admit to yourself, but also just to explore it. I mean, and therapists, I mean, all the therapists who make a living talking to people, it's a huge part of experience, our human experience.
But that might be why this is relatable, because most of the characters have that human emotion, that quality of looking within, saying, I did something wrong, or I'm not good enough, or, you know, I can't believe this is happening to me again, or why is this happening to me? I guess, you know, when it takes us back to the beginning of the interview, when we talk about loneliness, because in a weird way, loneliness is a projection of how we feel about ourselves inside. So maybe that's where people are grabbing that thought, loneliness, from this book.
I love that. I think loneliness is definitely a very solitary thing. I mean, we, even though we experience it, if it's not a collective experience. Even if we're standing, I mean, obviously people say I've never felt more alone than when I'm in a crowd of a million people, but it is a very singular feeling. And that's why it's so hard, I think, because we can't see past it. We you know, if you wait an hour, you'll probably feel different. But
right.
That moment of suffering is just, it's so hard on all of us, pretty much. And, you know, we have all these ways of trying to escape it, you know, with the self-help or with self-medication or whatever it is that you're doing. But it's such an enormous part of our lives and just who we become and who we continue to be.
Author Christine Sneed in studio with me tonight, and my guest at the big table, her new collection of short stories, The Virginity of Famous Men. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the conversation with Christine Sneed. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. Christine Sneed's my guest at the big table. She's the author of The Virginity of Famous Men, a collection of short stories. She's going to be having a book release party tomorrow night at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston. And she's going to be at Women and Children First at Andersonville on the 21st. And then she will be on October 5th at City Lit in Chicago. This is sort of the kickoff. I mean, you've got tour galore. Looking at the sheet, here we go. Right? This is the beginning for you.
I know. I'm excited and, you know, a little nervous, but I'm happy to be able to talk to people about my work. I mean, I think every author hopes for that.
For you, I mean, when you go on these tours and you the subject matter that you cover, I mean, when you're talking about romance and really about heartache and as we've talked about some of the things that go into heartache and loneliness, do people respond to that? I mean, do you get a lot of people who are like, oh, Christine, you don't know the half right about me?
I do actually have people like, I have a great story. Why don't you write it for me? And I think, well, actually, you can write it.
There you
know,
go.
You have,
that's a good
it's
answer.
Your story.
Yeah.
Right. I've been happy with response to my other books. And I mean, I think most of the time you don't really get to talk to the people who've read your book unless they're related to you or you're married to them. So I mean, on the whole, I was saying a little bit ago, I have students who have read my work and they're really kind about saying that it helped them work on something they were writing I think usually it's a very personal thing, a very private thing. Most readers are shy maybe about approaching authors, so I don't hear a lot, but what I do hear is usually very kind.
For you, I mean, you're a prolific writer. You've written novels, like you mentioned, Portraits of a Few of the People That that's the short story collection. Portraits of a Few of the People I've Made Cry, Little Known Facts, a novel. So many, you know, sort of pieces of work. I mean, you've created so much stuff and you have a lot that's in the hopper. Talk about your process. I mean, are you writing every day?
You know, I try to write every day. Today, I did not get to write very much.
This is your writing.
Yes.
Right,
I probably wrote for half an hour.
You can transcribe this. Right.
I do try to write most days of the week. I think when I'm not teaching full time, I'm not teaching full time right now, so I have more time to write, and I don't have as many student papers to read, so I am more productive during those periods. But I try to write, no matter how busy I am, at least 3 or 4 days for an hour or two a week. So that because it's really what keeps me from going nuts. I mean, it's such a huge part of my identity. And if I can't write that day, I like, why do I feel so awful? You know, and it's guilt also over not writing. And so I'm pretty regimented about it, definitely.
And you mentioned at the top just this sort of the combination or the contrast or the conflict in your life between novels and short stories. You prefer the short story. I mean, is that something that you, obviously setting out to do one of those kinds of projects, they're drastically different. I mean, do you have to be in a different headspace to just begin to think about one or the other?
Well, you know, sometimes it just depends on the form. With Little Known Facts, with the having 8 different point of view characters, that was actually the most fun I've had writing, and probably because I approached it almost like I approach short stories. Each chapter had a fresh arc and a fresh voice, and so that process of starting each chapter with a new...
was like a short story.
It really felt very refreshing, and that book just came together very quickly. And a book that I just was working on over the summer, it's a similar structure. I have 10 point of view characters, and I wrote the first draft very quickly, and then I went back and edited and revised, and that was actually fun. I was worried it wouldn't be, but it ended up because I felt like I was making it better. At least I hoped I was. So, but when I wrote my second novel, Paris, He Said, there's 3 point of view characters. There's actually 2 the same person, but one's first person and one's third person. That was hard. I rewrote that book 7 times, and I was ready to throw it out the window by the time I was done with it. So that was not that much fun. But ultimately, I'm glad, and I like the book. So it was just a different experience.
Well, for you, I mean, this collection, The Virginity of Famous Men, the one thing we didn't talk about, which is really getting pulled out in a lot of the reviews and the interviews and things, is about this idea of celebrity. You know, why don't you take us through that really quick before we wrap up? Where does the title come from, The Virginity of Famous Men? And then talk about the idea of the role of celebrity and it plays in some of these short stories.
Well, the title ended up, I stashed it in the story at the very end.
Right.
I had the title first. And I actually wrote about probably 12 years ago, I wrote a different story with that title. And I just knew it wasn't ready to, it didn't belong in this collection. So I wrote an entirely different story, and I picked up a year and a half after where my first novel, Little Known Facts, left off. And the title character, or the main character in that book, is named Ren Ivins, and he's a globally famous movie star. And it's his virginity that's being referred to in the title to some extent.
Right.
So, and celebrity itself is just, you know, America exports Hollywood films all over the world, and our celebrities go with them, of course, you know, image-wise. And we are the world's, you know, we're sort of, whether people like it or not, we purvey the world's culture. I mean, the Hollywood just has an enormous influence on so much. And I just think that's a very powerful, that's so much power, but it's also just a powerful topic. The fact that we live in these fantasy lives and like 7 billion people, basically. So it's just a very compelling subject.
And it's referenced in one of the stories where the woman has a divorce with the movie star who's in Canada. The fact that, you know, it's not as normal as a situation where, you know, there might be a divorce. This gets plastered all over the newspapers and the tabloids and things of that nature. And it changes the way that the dynamics of a breakup.
Because it's so public. But the feelings are extremely private. And the relationship is very private. But, I mean, one aspect of a movie star's private life, it's just not that private. So... yeah, the amount of pressure that is on a couple that is at least one of the people in the couple is famous, it's infinitesimal. I mean, it's just so much different. And it's already hard enough if you're not famous and you're in a relationship. So that, you know, magnifying all those stressors and writing that story, The First Wife, it was a lot of fun, but it was also, I just thought this would be the most awful thing. I would not want to be married to George Clooney because everyone would want to be married to him. And they don't. And I just thought this would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
So that was what I was, you know, thinking about as I wrote that story.
Right. Last question for you tonight. Do you see a life in which you can write about things that aren't breakups, emotional disarray and the point where things fall apart? I mean, there's romance novels and there's that, but then there's the part about that really you find something fresh out of when things fall apart. Do you find, is this sort of your genre and you can stick with it?
You know, the novel that I was working on over the summer is mostly about money, and it's about what their relationship to money is like and how that informs your character. So, but there's certainly relationships that are part of that. Like there's several married couples in the novel, and the stress that the sudden infusion of cash has on their lives.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm writing about a different topic, but I'm still, I'm using some of the old ones, you know, to support that main theme, I guess.
It all comes back to it. Things fall apart. That's all right. Christine Sneed, the award-winning Chicago author. Her new collection of short stories, The Virginity of Famous Men, is out now. She's going to have a big book release party tomorrow night at Bookends and Beginnings in Evanston. She'll also be at Women and Children First on September 21st, and she will be at City Lit on October 5th, among others. You can check out all that online. Christine, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. We appreciate you coming in studio.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we will play Picnic. This is our segment we've been doing all summer long, giving authentic, legitimate nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs because they need it. They're about to make their historic run, so we don't want to be at the end of that run being like, well, what do we call these guys just by their names? No, they have to have cool nicknames. Like in 84, it was a Sarge. You know, it was all the nicknames are associated, the Red Baron. So we have to come up with nicknames. So we have all summer long been doing this Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock. Tonight, we get to the final 2 weeks, and we have a big one, MVP candidate Anthony Rizzo. We need a nickname for Anthony Rizzo. That's what we're doing at 10 o'clock. If you are the one who chooses it, you're going to get a prize, 312-981-7200. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, this weekend is the Chicago premiere of the new film Those Left Behind by award-winning filmmaker Maria Finizzo. The movie's about the beginning after the end. It's a story of a family dealing with the grief and guilt of a suicide, reliving those memories and forging new and old relationships, with the painful reminder lurking in the memories and the shadows in everyday life. It's a powerful story told by a powerful filmmaker. Maria Finizzo has 2 Peabody Awards, plus several other awards for her works in documentaries. She's taken on subjects like stem cell research, nuclear war, and the psychology of adolescent girls. Great piece here in Chicago. She has been a tremendous presence in the Chicago documentary scene, working for Curtis Productions, Kartemquin, and others. This film is her first foray into feature-length film, but the fictional story in this film is one that resonates clearly, especially as September is Suicide Prevention Month. Finizzo will be at the Siskel Center for a Q&A after the screening on Saturday, but she's here on The Download tonight. Maria Finizzo, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Amazing film, very depressing film, but in a way that it was just so brilliant. I mean, I'm amazed at the for somebody who spent their life in documentaries, how much there was an attention to detail to the actual shooting of this film. It's beautiful.
The film is beautifully shot, and that's really to the credit of the cinematographer Raquel Fernandez, and she's a Spanish woman, and I interviewed her on Skype and looked at her work and really, really loved her work, and she just brought a spectacular eye to the film, and she also was so knowledgeable. She had this great crew of guys who recognized how smart and talented she was, and they just worked the tails off for her. And most of the film is shot with natural light.
It's really amazing. And why don't we start with where this comes from? For you, you've had a background in documentaries. Why treat a story about suicide through a feature-length film, a fictional film, as opposed to documentary?
Well, actually, the film began many, many years ago as a documentary film. And I was working on a film about suicide and doing a lot of interviews of family members who'd lost someone to suicide, so survivors, they call them, and even interviewed people who had tried to take their own life and hadn't. And the project never was completed because the funders felt it was much too sad of a film, and so they decided not to go forward with the project. But I had, in my memory, very moving stories from families who had gone through what is a very painful loss, and I could never let them go. And when I knew I wanted to make a fiction film, I had written a screenplay that was a little bit different but dealt with a family dealing with a tragedy. Mm-hmm. It was the death of their son in an accident. And the project had to be a much smaller project in terms of budget. And so I went back to writing the script, and it just the memory of those conversations I'd had with people came back to me, and I thought, okay, I'm going to make a film. I'm going to finally make that film, which I was trying to make many years ago, and it's and I'll do it as a fiction film.
Yeah, and it's such a strong story, the story of a family years later after a suicide of a, it's really told through the voice of one of the siblings. But this family gets together and it is just, it just never goes away. I mean, the story is really one about how they need to come to terms with what happened, and each character does it in a different way, but it, it's just there.
Well, I always sort of say it's a ghost story, right? Yeah. It's and the ghost is unresolved grief, right? And so in the beginning, when Shelley as a older woman arrives at the home, she stirs up the ghost, right? And so then it comes out of the water, and everywhere she looks, there he is. And I really like the notion of revisiting the past, because the past resonates in our present life all the time. And a really great storytelling tool is to go back to the past and look at the ghosts that lurk there and see how they are rippling in everyday life today, because they do in all of our lives.
Yeah, right. And also the relationships in the film between the father and the daughter and the mother and the father. I mean, everything about it really is defined around this tragedy that happened a long time ago in these people's lives.
Right, and what happens when you don't talk about it and process it, right? And so one person thinks it's their fault, the other thinks it's theirs, but together they can't stand to even look at each other, because they can just, what joins them at this point is just pain, right?
So. For you, I mean, obviously working in documentaries, I mean, and I want to ask you about this. We take a quick break here, and then why don't we do that? We'll take a break. Maria Finizzo in studio with me. She's the writer and director of the feature-length film Those Left Behind. It's going to be at the Siskel Center on Saturday. She'll be there for the Q&A. But what I really want to get at right after the break is just this, the idea of being able to make a transition from doing documentaries to feature film. I mean, that is obviously, there's a lot that is similar, but there's probably a lot that's not. So we'll talk with Maria more about that process when we return. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Maria Finizzo in studio, the award-winning filmmaker, and so many documentaries here in Chicago and all over the country. But also, her latest is a feature film, a fictional story, Those Left Behind, which deals with suicide. And it's, as you said, a ghost story, really about the unresolved relationships and angst around this tragedy that happened years before, and how it affects the family. It's a very, very, very good film that is going to be at the Siskel Center on Saturday night, where you will be doing a Q&A with the film. All right, let's talk about your career. You have been such a mainstay here in Chicago. You've done so many different things. How did you get into documentaries? What was it that you gravitated towards?
Well, I wanted to be a filmmaker the first time I sat in a dark movie theater when I was 4 years old, right? I mean, how many times did I see Lawrence of Arabia? 39 or something, I don't know. And I got out of college with a degree in film. And back when I got out of college, there were no internships or anything like that. And I got out of college thinking that someone would pay me to talk about French cinema. But they didn't. And so I had to figure out how to make my way in the film world. And I loved storytelling. And I knew I wanted to be a documentary filmmaker, but you don't just start out that. You can't just announce you're going to be a documentary filmmaker. You have to figure out how you're going to earn a living. And so I worked in the commercial commercials, because there's a lot done and you can actually find a job on a commercial and work your way up.
So production, yeah.
Production. And I learned a lot about production through commercials, but I always knew I wanted to tell stories, and so I kept trying to make my way towards longer things, right? And I ended up being very, very lucky at some point in being able to work for Bill Curtis on his new Explorer series, which was a great, just a wonderful experience for everybody who worked on it. And I learned a lot working on the new Explorers. But I had known about Kartemkin Films for years, right? Known about their films, admired Gordon Quinn and Jerry Blumenthal and the work they did. And so I knew I had to be there. And like a lot of filmmakers, I had kind of a film in my back pocket that I wanted to make, right, the dream film. And that film was Five Girls. And it was a coming-of-age story about adolescent girls. Right. And so I, showed up on the door of Kartemkin Films with nothing but, the dream to make this film. And what is great about Kartemkin Films is that that's what you need. You need a dream to make a film, and they'll help you do it.
And Kartemkin, and Gordon's been on the show, and Steve James is a big filmmaker here in town. Hoop Dreams, the documentaries. I mean, all of the documentaries worth anything have come out of Kartemkin films here in Chicago.
You mentioned Steve, and there's a lot of filmmakers there. We're all better filmmakers because of Gordon and Jerry. I mean, when I came, Steve and Peter Gilbert were working on Hoop Dreams, right? They were in, I don't know, year three or year four. And so what was great about Kartemkin is that they were going to help me make the film I wanted to make. And so documentary filmmaking or funding of documentary films was very different back then than it is now. And I was able, with Gordon and Jerry on as my executive producers, to get a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting for $300,000 off a paper proposal. That's unheard of today, right?
You just submitted a proposal and they said,
yep, I submitted a proposal in several revisions. This took a long time, but they eventually did give me the money. And that was great. So I could get started and get going, right? And so that was the first film I did with Kartemkin, and it was a wonderful experience in learning how to make a long-form verite film.
You mentioned, the idea that this was your dream film, Five Girls. That is talk about where you come up with your ideas for documentaries, because you've had a wide-ranging, when you think of the stuff that you've actually accomplished and won awards for. Mm-hmm. It's everything from stem cell research to, like you talked about, the adolescent girls, the soccer mm-hmm. team, nuclear weapons.
Well, I had gotten married and had a daughter. And at one point, I think she was five or maybe seven, we were wandering through what was then Blockbusters, right? They're gone now. And she said to me, "Where are all the films about girls?" And I thought, oh.
There's got to be a section here somewhere.
Somewhere there has right. to be films about girls, right? Only there really weren't very many. And so the films about girls were films about the way girls failed, or the terrible things that happened to girls, or all the the bad girls, or the whatever. And I wanted to make a film that looked at the way girls succeeded, because there are lots of strong women around, and they don't come out of nowhere, right? So they were strong girls at some point. And so that's how Five Girls came about. It came about as looking at the way girls are resilient, right? So it doesn't mean that you don't have trouble in your life, so
right.
bad things don't happen to you, but it's the quality of resilience that allows you to bounce back. And so taking that kind of a lens on the lives of five young women for 2 years was a really wonderful way of looking at adolescence, because while a lot of things were going to happen to them, I didn't have to look at them as failures. I could look at them as succeeding. And that, I think, was a very empowering film for me to make, and also for young girls to see, because mm-hmm. for the first time in a long time, they saw their stories on the screen.
And what goes into making a documentary like Five Girls? I mean, you have to follow five girls. I mean, that's not something that you do for 2 weeks at a time. It's much different than feature films where it's like, we got mm-hmm. 11 days to shoot this. It takes years. It
took me 2 years to shoot, and I shot five girls for 2 years, and I shot their families, and I shot them in the morning when they woke up before they went to school, and I caught arguments with their parents, and when they went to prom, and when they graduated, and when they went off to college. And so it was really, I became very close with all these young women. I'm still close to some of them. And what the hardest part then was taking 3 hours of footage, 3 hours, 300 hours of footage, sorry, and cutting it into a two-hour film.
Yeah.
Right. So, and David Simpson did a really great job doing that. So, and I think that's where I learned, or I began to learn, really the structure of narrative filmmaking. Right, is how you make a story. Right, with narrative arcs and characters and climaxes and emotional moments, which is why transferring to fiction film was not so difficult for me. Right. First of all, I wrote it. I can write. And so all those years of working in documentary gave me a really solid sense of narrative storytelling. And so I was able to make that transition. Not easily, but certainly I was ready for it.
Well, we'll continue the conversation here. Maria Finizzo in studio with me. She's the Peabody Award-winning filmmaker, documentary filmmaker, but now feature filmmaker with the film Those Left Behind. It'll be at the Cisco Center on Saturday night. She'll be there for a Q&A. Let's take a quick break and an update for tonight's news. When we come back, I want to talk about, you kind of just mentioned about the landscape of documentary filmmaking changing. You know, it's a lot different than it was when you started. And I always think, and I know Pete and I have talked about this, we had Gordon, like I said, Gordon was in here talking about this is almost the mecca of documentary filmmaking in this country. It comes out of Chicago. I mean, for years. But how has it changed? How difficult is it to be able to produce these things? Or has it gotten easier with the advent of streaming services and other places for documentaries? Maria Finizzo, my guest tonight here on The Download. Stay with us. Thank you, Mr. Martyr. Justin Kaufman here. It's The Download on 720 WGN Radio. We are talking with Maria Finizzo. She's a great filmmaker here in town, Peabody Award winner. I throw that around. I mean, you can say award winning, but Peabody Award, that's great. That's huge.
Thank you.
That's for like politicians and Ira Glass, right?
I guess. I think he's won several. Yeah.
Well, let's talk. I mean, you have made, we were talking right before the news just about your life in documentaries and the feature film that you just put out, which is going to be at the Siskel Center on Saturday, is called Those Left Behind. You'll be there for the Q&A. You know, making that transition to do that. I mean, yes, it's probably similar in the way that you're a writer and you're a filmmaker, you know it, but they're extremely different behind the scenes. I mean, they are, a documentary, you're going to have so much more looseness to trying to find the moment. Whereas in a feature film, you wrote the moment. This is where you have to get it. So talk about being a director and a writer and the differences behind the camera.
So I think one of the most important things about directing a fiction film is when you, as the director, step on the set, you have 45 people all waiting for you to tell them what you want. And so it's really a leadership position. And it's very important for the director to know what they want and what they're hoping to get, because if they don't, then the actors get nervous and the crew gets nervous because there's a vacuum, right? So I was really, really prepared, and I think
you knew this going in.
I knew this going in, and I knew that, you know, one of the worst things you can do is come in and have like no vision, right? Because then everybody's nervous. But I think because my entire life I've loved to tell people what to do. That's sort of bossy. So it was a really natural extension of my bossiness, right? And I can actually be bossy on the set because it was my show. And one of the things I also think helps me is that when you're a director on a fiction film, it's really important that you connect with your actors and the crew. And you have to have a relationship with the actors because they're, in a sense, trusting you with their careers, right?
Right.
And so I have a good rapport with people, and I make them feel comfortable. And I could sit and talk to them about the characters. And so that was something that I think I learned also over time as a documentary filmmaker, because the kind of films I made at Kartemplin Films and make require that the people in the films trust me.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, about how you've evolved as a filmmaker, as a documentary filmmaker specifically. I mean, from the early days of doing Five Girls to the next project, what have you learned about being a more efficient, prolific documentarian?
Well, documentaries, I've learned to be patient. Because sometimes you go out and you start filming and you're not really sure what the story is. And that makes you nervous.
I was going to say, is that scary?
It's a little scary. You think, gee, I don't really have a story here. But if you're patient and you allow the story to evolve, what happens is there's always a story. And the film I last documentary I made, In the Game, which is also going to be at the Cultural Center on this Saturday, there's a free screening that WTTW is sponsoring.
That's the soccer.
Right, the soccer one. That started out a very different film. And I thought I was making a film about Title IX, and I thought it was going to be this, that, or the other thing. And actually, as the film evolved over a six-year period, it turned out to be a film about equality and the playing field, which is not level, and how education is supposed to level the playing field, but it doesn't really do
that. And that's
that.
Not necessarily what you set out to do when you
started. No, not at
film.
All. I thought I was coming to Kelley High School to make a film about how girls of color are the left behinds of the sports movement. That's what they're called. They're coined. And that the boys at Kelly would have everything they needed and the girls would have nothing. And that's the sort of preconceived notion I brought to the film when I'm going down to Kelly High School. This is the film I'm going to make. That wasn't what I found at all. What I found instead was a public institution, Kelly High School, that was committed to educating a population of kids that are normally ignored or thrown away, right? This is kids at the poverty level. We can't educate these kids. Can't happen. That was not what I found at Kelly High School. And what I also found there was a soccer coach who was immensely dedicated to the young women, girls, who were on the soccer team, not because they were going to be star soccer players, but because he knew that soccer was a way of keeping them engaged with life, right? If they had to show up for practice, if they had to keep their grades up,
right,
they would do better. And it wasn't as if the boys had everything and the girls had nothing. In fact, the kids at Kelly High School, no one had anything. They didn't even have a field to play on, right? So that was a very different story, right? And so,
and there has to be something, you know, as you as a filmmaker, and this probably comes with experience, but the concept of being able to let go what your preconceived notion is. But if you're going to come in with a mission statement for a film and it wasn't happening, you can go one or two ways. You can try to force it to happen, or you can let it go.
Well, forcing it to happen is always a bad idea. and so what I remember Gordon Quinn has said it many times, we don't really know what's going to happen in our story. And because you don't, because we're Verite filmmakers, and so we're following a story as it unfolds over time. And I could never have imagined the things that happened in the game were going to happen, right? I didn't know they would eventually get a field, which they do by the end of the film. After 6 years of filming, they get a field. You know, I had no idea Maria, one of the characters, would get married and that they would all, Elizabeth would finally get back in school. I mean, none of those things are what you can predict. And so if you just allow a story to unfold, it's always better than anything you would.
And it's finding those moments, those special moments. For you as a filmmaker who's making a transition to feature film to fiction work, are you able to find the same moments in a written script? I mean, is it how do the moments materialize? Is it great acting? Is it a shot you didn't think about? What is it about finding the moment in a scripted fiction film as opposed to a documentary?
Well, in a scripted film, what you're doing is you're finding sort of those wonderful moments in great performances, like your actors really get in touch with the emotion of a scene, or they become very quiet and they act with each other and they really connect with whoever they're acting with. And then there's the, you know, what happens in a fiction film is everything comes together, right? The sound design and the music and the cinematography. And you have this wonderful collaborative piece of art, which at the end comes together because of a lot of different people. And it's very funny when you are making a fiction film, every day you watch dailies. And I say, and it's true, you're watching the worst version of your film. And you're right. This is so terrible.
I've heard that.
It's bad. It's horrifying, right? I mean, it's horrifying. And then little by little, it gets better and better, and then it all comes together in a wonderfully collaborative piece.
We're talking with award-winning filmmaker Maria Finizzo in studio here. You know, and I teased it right before the news, just this idea of you know, Chicago being really a home for documentary film. This is the Mecca, if you will, for this country. So many great filmmakers are here and continue to work here in Kartemquin and Bill Curtis Productions for so many years. And the idea of this really being a place where documentary film can thrive. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that Chicago is a place that documentary films have come?
Well, I think that Kartemquin Films plays a huge role in that. First of all, they've been here for 50 years, and that in of itself is an enormous accomplishment, right? And it was and is a place where you as an independent filmmaker can walk through the doors and make the film that you want to make. So there's no one telling you, well, it has to be this way or
right,
that way.
Right.
There's just a group of people who are very supportive who are helping you grow as a filmmaker. And that's a wonderful that's just a very unique kind of place. And so I think Kertemkwin has had played a major role in that. And then, you know, we've had really fine filmmakers. Steve James is an extraordinary filmmaker, and he has, you know, his stature is, you know, nationwide, as is Gordon Quinn's. And so, you know, there are other fine filmmakers. Bob Hercules has a beautiful film about Maya Angelou that's also going to be at the Gene Siskel. So, you know, we're from the Midwest, and we just are good, solid filmmakers, right? And I think that's what's happened.
Do you feel as a filmmaker there's more opportunity, that it's getting easier to make or to distribute documentary films because of the way that it's kind of broken apart in Hollywood, where there's a lot of different places, or is it harder?
Well, it's actually it might be easier to make a film because you can make your film with your iPhone.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It's very hard to get an independent documentary film funded, financed. There are more people going for the same small pool of money, and the kind of films that are made more and more feel like fiction films. So they have a lot of elements that fiction films have. They're highly produced, right?
Documentaries, right?
Yeah. And so they're competitive, okay? And they cost a lot of money. A documentary film would cost $1 million, okay? And so getting that kind of money to make your film takes a lot, and usually it takes, and this happens with a lot of filmmakers, they have to take their own money to get it off the ground, okay? And they have to work for a long time before any of the money comes in. Right, that's not unusual for filmmakers to work 2 or 3 years without paying themselves. So in that sense, it's not good.
That's okay? Not good. Right.
It's not good at all, because this is a career profession and people are working for free. On the back end, distribution in some respects is easier because you can put your own film up on YouTube if you want. But because funding is so difficult, filmmakers look for a good broadcast license to help with the funding, right?
That's,
to help
yeah,
pay
that's
up,
where
right?
TTW comes in.
WTTW,
kind of places, yeah.
POV, Independent Lens,
right.
HBO, Showtime. So that's a really important element for getting your film finished, because you need that money. And those spots are very competitive, right?
You say that more people are trying to get to that money that is traditionally funded, documentaries. Is that pool shrinking? The money? Is the money part shrinking, or less people funding projects?
I would
like
say
this?
Less people are funding. And also, you have to do a lot of work to get $15,000, right? Well, if your film costs $1 million, that's not going to go very far. And the work you've had to do to write the grant to get the $15,000, you're not being paid for, right? So there's a lot of work to get work.
Right.
And that's unfortunate, because what it does is it narrows the pool of people who can make films. And narrowing that pool means that you're losing people who don't have access to money to get their film off the ground.
And that's what Hollywood is all about,
right?
Who has access to the money.
Right, right. And that shouldn't be in documentary filmmaking. Right.
Maria Finito, a great filmmaker, documentary filmmaker here in town. She's also now a feature filmmaker. Her new film, Those Left Behind, a story of a family dealing with grief and guilt of a suicide that happened in the family years before. She's going to be at the Siskel Center for the screening, which is Saturday night, this Saturday night, the Siskel Center right here on State Street. She'll be there for the Q&A. After the screening, and you can find the movie, Those Left Behind. Is it going to be distributed in any?
We do have a distributor. I don't know when and that's
right,
going to happen.
Okay.
But there are tickets left, so please go out and see the
film.
There
you go. Maria Finito, it's a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Show tonight. I'm exhausted. I'm emotionally exhausted, Pete. Maria Finito, that movie. I mean, it was choke up city. It's really good. Daphne Zuniga is the star from Melrose Place. Remember that? She's the main star. And it was funny because my friend, it's inside story, but I had the screener, right? And they send you a link, essentially. And the link that I got, I started to watch it this morning. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch this. And it was it was a foreign film, which is like a silent film that had some foreign film overdub and like still photography. And I'm like, this is not what I thought it was. And I realized it was the wrong
They sent you the wrong
they
link.
They sent me the wrong screening, right? And I was like, oh, so I emailed them. They sent me back. And so then when I got this screening for Those Left Behind, it didn't say Those Left Behind, so it just kind of starts. And I'm like, is this? And the first actor on screen is a friend of mine. Yeah, Jillian Vigman, who is a great comedian from Chicago. She's been in a ton of stuff. She was actually in Schadenfreude right at the beginning. She's from Second City. We all took classes together. So I was like, this can't be this movie that Maria Finizio did, right? And, you know, and then there's a little bit more credit sequence, and then it says Those Left Behind. And she actually plays the mom in flashback scenes.
Wow.
Yeah, and I didn't even know she was in it. And I was just talking to Maria about that they shot a lot of this in L.A., and Jillian was part of it. But, yeah, just the idea that I'm like, once again, what, did I get the improv reel? And it's Jillian, my friend. But, yeah, it's really good. If you're looking for something to do, if you're looking for a good cry,
mm-hmm.
a Saturday night cry,
yeah,
the Siskel Center is it. And then before that, Christine scene, I'm tapped out, man. I'm gonna need to rely heavily on you, Klein, and Martyr, because I'm emotionally spent.
You're tapped, yeah.
The Virginity of Famous Men, the book about breakups, is 15 stories about, you know, heartache, despair, and loneliness. Then you go into a movie about suicide.
Yeah.
And then at the end, Maria, who's a tremendous filmmaker, talking about how, you know, if you're a documentary filmmaker, you're pretty much screwed. There will be no more documentaries because there's not enough money. I'm done.
We need some Anthony Zitti Rizzo fun.
Yeah.
So tomorrow night, you guys, I was just thinking about this. I mean, they are home tomorrow, the Cubs, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Brew Crew.
And it's a night game. Yes. So they would be wrapping up. There's at this time tomorrow night, if they get a win tomorrow night at Wrigley, this essentially is like, it's going to get crazy. Like, Chicago's going to get crazy tomorrow night at 24 hours.
Justin, we have WGN 720 team coverage live from Wrigleyville.
I love it.
Judy Pilak will be on a rooftop. I think Kevin Powell and Sam Pianiotovic will be inside.
Awesome.
Wrigley Field.
And Mark Carmen's going to be in studio with us.
There you go.
So I'm telling you, man, we got it covered.
Man, and we've got Cubs in our DNA, I'm telling you.
We should get...
What if they lose? Is Judy going to still be there?
We'll I think Judy's in for the long haul. I think she's going to be there for all four nights. It's just the way it is.
As long as there are still margaritas on the rooftop, I'm sure she'll be there.
It's going to be great. I mean, it's amazing to think that, you know, the Cubs could clinch a division. Because last year we were talking about it. They didn't win the division. They were a wild card team. And so they didn't really clinch a wild card spot. And that's not as exciting as winning a division. So to have – I mean, they won divisions back in the Lou Piniella days, right,
mm-hmm.
where they did it with the Mark DeRosas of the world. You know, those were division wins where they promptly were bounced in the first round. Derek Lee, 0 for 12. Aramis Ramirez, 0 for 12.
It's a new team.
That's right. It is a new team. Those guys are not on that team. So tomorrow night, this could be the place you would want to be here because we're going to have so much fun. We are going to cover the clinch. That's what we're going to do here on The Download. I'm Jack, man. How great would it be? I mean, just as a sports fan in Chicago, to be on the air, to be on WGN radio when the Cubs clinch a playoff appearance or clinch a division, that's pretty special.
If they do get into the World Series and win this thing, I want to be right here in this anchor seat.
Yeah, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they better not be doing this like game five of the World Series at like 11 o'clock. You know, 11 o'clock, let's start here. It's a.m.
On a Sunday.
Early baseball on a Sunday. No, it's got to be like a nice, like a game four sweep where they're playing. No, we want it in Chicago. Well, no, it would be. Chicago's only going to – dumb all-star games. The Cubs have the best record in baseball by far, and they're going to be the visitors in the World Series, right?
Well, hold on.
What?
Well, yeah, I mean, they will be the visitors in the World Series, but the thing that I'm concerned about –
Once
we win the division, that's great, but the Nationals, you know, they're only like six or seven games behind the Cubs for best record.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You're right. Let's walk it back.
Let's not totally collapse. Let's focus, guys.
I'm leaning back.
And as diehard Cubs fans will tell you, Pete, these still are the Cubs.
No, they're not.
Plenty of opportunities for the wheels to fall off.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm an optimist. Half glass half full.
Anthony Rizzo is a great player. He plays baseball so well for the Chicago Cubs. Oh, yeah. Anthony Rizzo. He is so wonderfully talented and great. Uh-huh. Anthony Rizzo is the best player in the whole wide world. He is a left-handed batter and a left-handed thrower. And he is such a good player for the Chicago Cubs. I respect him very much.
Wow.
Because he knows how to hit the ball so well. Uh-huh.
There's something there, Zim. Are you making stuff in your beats in your basement now? That sounds like a like one you just made up.
That's actually that's early 2000s Modest Mouse right there, actually.
All right, there we go. What a kickoff to tonight's picnic. This, of course, our segment we do every Wednesday night where we are giving legitimate, authentic nicknames to the 2016 Chicago Cubs. We've been doing it all summer long. We have a million of these. I mean, it's amazing to think how many people. We should run through them. Pete will run through them at some point tonight, and we will get those on record again. But tonight we've gotten down to the last 2 weeks of picnic, and we've got two great players left tonight. Anthony Rizzo to next Wednesday. Jake Arrieta. Matt Klein's in studio as he is every Wednesday. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. Hi, Mom.
There you go. And, of course, Pete Zimmerman and Rob Martier are here as well. Roger Badish. Is Roger Badish around? Because he's going to be our judge today on the show. When Roger Badish sits down, he's sitting in for Esmeralda tonight to judge the Anthony Rizzo nickname. Roger Badish. All right.
I am here. I'm ready to rock and roll, baby.
All right. So you ready to take on the responsibilities of being the judge?
Sure.
All right, so we're going to come up with a couple of Anthony Rizzo nicknames.
Okay.
The callers are going to come in. They're going to give us three. And then you, at the end of the night, you are the one who is going to choose.
Awesome.
Are you ready for that responsibility?
Got my gavel. I'm ready, baby.
All right, sounds good. 312-981-7200. They're already coming in. What do we need to know, Matt Klein, about Mr. Anthony Rizzo?
Anthony Rizzo, considered by many to be the captain of this Chicago Cubs team. Full name Anthony Vincent Rizzo, and he was born to be a Cub with a birthday of 8/8/89.
On the
1 year anniversary of the lights being installed at Wrigley Field.
Wow.
Yeah. He's number 44. He's a first baseman from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He went to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Eagles, the mascot there. Okay. Okay. He's an Italian-American. Roots trace far back to Sicily,
really?
Actually. Yeah, and he's kind of been a Jed Hoyer project in that Jed Hoyer drafted him along with Theo and that brain trust in Boston back in 2007. And then Hoyer went to the Padres in 2009. And then in 2010, Rizzo goes to the Padres. Then Hoyer comes to the Cubs in 2011, and then in 2012, Rizzo comes to the Cubs.
Yeah, right.
So they've kind of been linked together pretty much since he was drafted out of high school.
Right.
And that's about it. I mean, there's a lot more stuff.
Well,
but
I mean, he's having a great year.
He's having a great year.
A lot
right.
of people, you know, have him neck and neck with Chris Bryant for the MVP of the league. Not
yes.
his team, obviously.
And obviously the monster game today, two home runs. It is such a great race, and unfortunately they might be taking votes away from one another and hurting the Cubs' chance of having an MVP. You have Daniel Murphy in Washington.
No.
Come
on, Klein. Why do you dirty the segment with mentioning Daniel Murphy? No, that guy's nothing.
He's nothing.
He's nothing.
He's nothing.
He's a nothing guy. He's always going to be nothing.
But it's tough. I mean, you know, you get a two or three game stretch where you're like, all right, Bryant pulling away. This guy's MVP.
Right.
And then Rizzo. I mean, but listen, it's great. It's so much fun to watch.
All right. So we got a lot coming in. People are excited tonight to play picnic. Why don't we get right to it? 312-981-7200. Let's go to Carol. Carol, what do you got for Anthony Rizzo?
Actually, I've got two. Can I give you two?
Yeah, you can give me two.
Okay. One is Tony the Tiger.
That's good. Okay.
And the second one is Big Cheese Riz instead of Big Cheese Whiz.
Right,
Big
right.
Cheese
oh,
okay. Riz.
Big Cheese Riz.
Or we just go Cheese Riz.
Cheese Riz.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you could do that too.
All cheese right. Riz. I like that. That's a good one.
I came up with both of those real quick. So.
All right. Thanks, Carol.
I had a little help from my son too.
All right. Good. Good. Oh, I'm glad you're giving credit where credit's due.
What was the first? What was?
You quickly went. Yeah, I came up with those all by myself. Well, no, I didn't.
What was the first one?
The first one was Tony the Tiger.
Tony the Tiger. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then he said I've got a better one. So
all right.
I said, we'll see whose is better.
Carol, I like that one. Cheese Riz. We appreciate it. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. You guys have a great evening.
You
bye-bye.
Too. All right, there you go. That's not bad. Cheese Riz is not bad.
Cheese Riz, yeah.
All right, let's keep going here. Let me go to some of the texts here. 773 says, for Anthony Rizzo, how about the razor? The razor.
Does he have a Gillette sponsorship or something?
Well,
he could.
That comes with the nickname, right? You could totally see Anthony Rizzo in 3 years being like, I just can't get a close shave. That's why I get a 5-blade Gillette sensor, and then they
that's
show
why,
a computerized
That's why
stuff.
7 blades are better than 6.
Exactly. All right, let's keep going. 269 says, how about Swizzler?
Okay.
Swizzler.
Oh, Rizzle Stick. Somebody texted
Rizzle
me.
Rizzle Stick, there you go. Swizzler. All right, Swizzler. Let's continue here with... Riz King of home runs. I'm not sure what that Riz King. Riz King.
Nobody beats the Riz.
Yeah, right.
Steinfeld.
815 Big O for Rizzo.
Okay. That's probably has everything to do with just offense.
Yeah. Big O.
Okay.
I mean, it's the Big O is Orion Samuelson here, but 630 the sizzling Sicilian.
Okay.
262 says, how about 44 Magnum?
Ooh.
44 Magnum. Mm.
Yeah, that one's pretty good.
815 goes legit. Italian Stallion.
Italian Stallion, yeah. Well, there's a lot of...
That's good. It's good. Lots of good stuff.
Italian Beef.
Italian Beef.
The Boot.
There you go. All right, 312-981-7200. Take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to get to Susan. I want to get to everybody on the line. All of the texts. Keep them coming. 312-981-7200. We're playing Picnic here on the download. Anthony Rizzo.
The mad Russian took his leave. Then Cavaretta led the team. Ernie's baseball days were full of fun. Williams began his streak. And Fergie was at his peak. Wrigley Field had many moments in the sun. I'm talking baseball. Glenn Beckett, Andy Cubs.
Classic.
Baseball. Kessinger and Randy. Santo and the Vulture on the club. Handsome Ransom, DeFondi, Kenny Hubbs.
This one actually made me
tears. Talking baseball.
This is a cool song.
This is a cool song, yeah.
Baseball and the Cubs.
Aw, reminds so many years.
The bleacher. Bums, the
all right. It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. We're playing Picnic tonight. Anthony Rizzo, we got here. I can't believe it. We have given nicknames to almost all of the 2016 Chicago Cubs. We held Anthony Rizzo and Jake Arrieta to the end. Anthony Rizzo gets his treatment tonight. 312-981-7200. If we pick your nickname, you're going to the sold-out Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival. It's coming up on the weekend, September 24th. All right, so let's get right back to it. Lots to do tonight. Let's go to Susan. Susan, what do you like for Anthony Rizzo?
I've got two. One is Rizzo All Biz.
All Biz.
And the other is Anthony the Great.
Anthony the Great.
Okay.
Is it Anthony with no
Anthony,
H?
Like Mark Anthony.
Yeah.
No, Anthony. I can't talk.
You can change it if you'd like. Would
I
you
like
to be Anthony or
Anthony?
Anthony.
Yeah.
However you like it.
All right, Anthony. Anthony! Yeah, all right, good. Thanks, Susan. That's good.
All sure. Right.
Anthony the Great. Also, let's go to Mark. Mark, what do you like for Anthony Rizzo?
I was thinking more along the lines of Wizzo, you know, the magician.
Yeah, right.
All
right. Doody, doody, doody.
That's so good.
You can do it.
You can do it. That's so good, Mark.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
That is a good one because you could do something when he comes up. We all have the wigs and we go.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Actually, that one's really good. Yeah. I forgot about Rizzo.
Could you imagine? Like, you do the whole thing. And then Rizzo could think about all the local commercials he could do.
Absolutely.
Playing off of that. There's lots you can do there. 312-981-7200. 847 says, how about if he was ordained as a, if he clergied up. He could be called the pasta pastor. 630 says the Riz kid. 224 says the Italian-ted Mr. Risley. That's like something for rapid
How
fire.
How about H to the Rizzo?
Yes, that's yeah, right. That comes from Jill. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Riz bro. He's everyone's bro. He's the Pied Piper of the team, Riz bro.
Mario Batali.
The Rizzo of Cub Oz. I don't know if that...
There's got to be some sort of plate on like cured Italian meats or something like that. Yeah, like the big capicola. Right. Or salami.
Which is very, bologna. That's very Babe Ruth type.
Right.
Yeah. Like baseball time, right?
Yeah, old-timey.
Old-timey. I like this 847, risottoni with cheese. 847, risonculus. 815 says bleacher bomb. 815 says faux rizzle.
I still can't get over H to the Rizzo. Jill's so proud of that one, too.
312, Rizzly Bear.
The underboss.
847, get your Riz on.
What was the clergy reference?
Pastor, pasta of pastor, pastor of pasta.
How about just calling him the monk?
Yeah, ooh. Right. That would be good, the monk.
I'll write that down.
Let's see what else we have here. Northside Lumber Company, 630 says. Charisma, Charismo. It's a play on charisma.
How about Bruisin' B. Anthony?
815, the big smile.
Or there's, how about Rizzoli and Smiles?
That's
yeah, good. Right?
That's like the new poster.
Yeah, Rizzoli and Smiles.
That could be Bryant and
right.
Rizzo.
Yeah. Rizzoli. Didn't we talk about Bryant being voted like the best teeth or hair or something like that? Teeth.
Oh, my God.
Rizzoli and Smiles.
Yeah, sorry, patent pending on that.
Done.
That's it. Rizzoli and Smiles, the Bryant Rizzo poster.
White strip.
We're on to something. Rizzoli and Smiles, and we could do something where maybe they're like, you know, they got their bats and they're in a dental chair or something. I don't know what
right. It
is. Or they could do the Rizzoli and Isles. Anyway.
Yeah, we just send them out on, you know, some really sort of matter. Quirky investigative storyline.
Yeah. They're two cops.
Yeah.
All right, we're getting good stuff tonight. Since he's always stretching into the stands to catch foul balls, how about Stretch? That's from Carol, 708.
Okay.
Homer Rizzo, like home run, but home Rizzo. 630 says the Northside Nailer.
All right.
815, the Silent Assassin. 630 says Rizzotini. 708, the Grand Rizzoli.
The Grand Rizzoli. What's that?
I don't know. That's like, yeah. Anyway. 847, Anthony Holy Cannoli Rizzo.
Cannoli. Yeah, that's something we didn't use.
847, Rizzania. Come on, man. I mean, putting on the Riz, 224, Riz-tastic.
Yeah, like you could do like Lay Riz.
That's what they have right here. 847, Lay Riz for instead of Lay Miz.
Yeah.
Ratso Rizzo. Well, that's good.
Okay.
The Rizzinator, 708. Let's go to Rich. Rich, what do you got, Rich? What do you like for Anthony Rizzo?
Since you guys think of him as the captain and he's Italian heritage, how about the Godfather?
The Godfather, yeah. If he was older, I would think maybe the Godfather, right? But maybe he could be like the son of the Godfather, the Al Pacino.
Right. Michael.
Yeah.
Michael.
Let's just call him Michael. So why do you call him Michael? I don't get that nickname. Well,
you know in the Godfather where it's like he's not...
There you go.
You guys have a good show. I enjoy this segment.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you. Thanks, Rich. Yep. Thanks for calling in. Yep.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. I'm going to take this ball and put it into center field, and it's not coming back.
You throw a strikeout. You throw a fastball right now, 2-2.
And if you put it high and tight, we're going to have some issues.
Luca Brasi sleeps in the bleachers.
All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We come back. Not only do we continue with this amazing, amazing creative just outpouring that is the picnic tonight for Anthony Rizzo, but we get Matt Klein's rapid fire. And also, I want to hear Roger Badish has to hear the pitch for Rob Martyr's ZD.
Ooh.
Right?
Hey now.
Yeah.
He's got a pitch. He's ready to go. That's all coming up after the news here. Picnic, Anthony Rizzo, 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
go Cubs, go all the way. I hear Cubby Nation say, go Cubs, go all the way. Hey, hey, go Cubs, go all the way. I hear Cubby Nation say, go Cubs, go all the way. Hey, 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 we keep on hoping every fall to see the Cubbies take it all. Every Cub fan that I know just wants to go to see a World Series game, a championship our Cubbies play. We'll paint Chicago Cubby blue. Now sing along with me. Yeah, you. Go Cubs, go all the way.
That seems like a song that put a little bit of time and effort into. Doesn't it? Like
I think James Murphy produced that, actually.
That sounds like Kevin Powell in his mom's basement.
Trying new synths out. He's just got the synth set up.
Hey, Mom, come on down. Check it out.
Check it out. I got four
synths. I just got
synths.
Done with Rose Show. Come on down.
MIDI producer. All right. We're playing Picnic here on the Download 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 coming up with nicknames for Anthony Rizzo. If we pick your nickname, Roger Badish is the judge tonight in for Esmeralda. We'll give you tickets to the sold-out Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival, which is coming up on Saturday, September 24th. Rob Martier, I wanted to give you some space to be able to tell Roger Badish why you think your nickname is the one we should go with. Rob?
I've been touching on it all night. If you've been listening to some of my sports updates, ZD, Anthony ZD Rizzo. And the reason why is that I feel as though the ZD shape of pasta is one of the heartiest, best pastas, most versatile, that you can put to any dish.
Yeah.
You can put meat sauce with it. You can bake it into a casserole. You can make it into a nice summer salad. Maybe even put a little light pesto on it with white wine.
It's clutch.
It is a clutch pasta.
It's a clutch noodle.
Now, it is a clutch noodle.
Yeah. The ridges or smooth?
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter.
I think okay. You got to go smooth.
I like the tubular shape.
For a Rizzo, you're smooth. Yeah.
Okay.
You can
Ooh.
Even pack stuff into the tube. So
it's packed.
So baked ziti. So it's baked Anthony ziti Rizzo. Anthony ziti Rizzo.
Let me just throw one more thing out there, and I love that. I love that about you, Rob. That's a great one. But again, we got to look at a marketing angle on this.
Yeah,
let's
right.
keep this in mind, people.
Yep.
Got to look at a marketing angle. That's where this judge come to judge is leaning.
You're leaning to something you can put on a poster.
Oh, even more than that. Oh, I'm
well, there are companies that make pasta.
I'm talking giveaways. I'm talking yeah. first 1,000 to the ballpark.
Well, you can hand out like hard pasta, like ZD, and you can throw it on the field when he hits a home run. Can
yeah, absolutely.
We can do it in Detroit or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
All right. We'll get to it. We got a lot of suggestions coming through. Let's get right to the phones. Let's try Kevin. Kevin, what do you got for Anthony Rizzo?
Well, I have a few quick ones. One is Big Pasta.
Yep.
Bopperino, or the way he danced around walls and tarps to catch balls, Dancing Bear.
Dancing Bear, okay. Dancing okay. Bear. All right, that's good. Thanks, Kevin.
All right.
Good stuff. All right, there we go. Let's keep going.
I can't stop thinking about Brazilian Smiles' first case. You know, like, what's it going to be?
Yeah, what's it going to be?
Oh, my God, I can't wait. What do you got?
630 Zippo. Rizzo Zippo. I don't know. Tony No Bologna Rizzo.
Okay. We were looking for me.
630 says the Riz Man. Okay. Anthony Ribby Ripper Rizzo. I love 312's Hot Hips Houlihan. I'm not sure that. I'm not sure where that's coming from, but okay.
1924 is where that's coming from.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Hot Hips Houlihan.
847 Rizzo Razzo Rizzo. Time for fall balls to go home.
Hmm.
630 says Rizzle Zizzle. 847 says the Rizzinator. How about Swift Baby regarding Taylor Swift's song Before He Bats? 224 says the Saint. 847 says the Brony. 847 says Cal Rizzone. Rizdiculous. That's a good one. Rizdiculous or Rizomatic. Anthony the Associate Rizzo. He's not the Godfather. He's the
right.
Hitman, otherwise referred to as the Associate.
Yeah. The Black Hand. Wasn't that was like the name of the early mob and the
right.
Does he wear a black glove?
don't know.
I can't remember.
608 says the Great Slambino.
Okay.
You're in the Rizzone. That's what 847 says. Air Rizzo, Rigatoni. That's where we're back to rockin' Rizzo. Okay. All right, I got some more here that are coming in, too. all right, these are good. These are really good. All right, so for Anthony Rizzo, this comes from Seth. This comes from Tommy. Cheeks, the Big Ragu from Laverne and Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
The Dazzling Dimple.
Ooh.
Rizzalicious, which we've heard. Risotto. Ooh. That might be a little bit better.
Risotto.
Risotto. Yeah. The Big Clutch. And this one from Josh. This is good. Rizzo, my God. and then peppers, because he's hot and sweet.
We already have sweet peppers.
Oh, that's right. We do for Contreras, yeah. Right. So you already got that. All right. 312.
He does smile a lot.
Let's Riz the Wiz, as in wizard. Rigatoni. Playing off his name, Tony the Pasta, Rigatoni, and Wrigley.
Yeah.
All right.
How about, I got a few here.
All right. Are you ready for rapid fire?
I'll rapid fire.
Rapid fire. This is a new segment here as we get later into Picnic. We finally started some segments within segments. Matt Klein is ready with rapid fire. Rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Rapid fire. Rapid fire. All right. Here we go. I got a few. Some of them were taken already by the callers and texters, but Riz Marquee. I love that one. Marquee name, Anthony Rizzo. Anthony Scordain, taking the Cubs to parts unknown. Captain Bangaroo. Riz Fair. Riz Taylor, six rings is not enough. Riz Khalifa. How about Blue Blazer? Because it's Rizness casual. Rizzatoni. Leader Frampton. Macatoni. Gianni Rizzacci. Luciano Pavarazzi. Rizabella Rossellini, and Smiles Davis.
Smiles Davis right at the end. There you go.
I had to cross off like six or seven. The callers,
and
callers,
it's really funny, right? Yeah. When you started, the one that just popped in was Riz Marquee. Like,
yeah.
Riz Marquee. So that's good. All right, 312-981-7200. We will come back. We'll wrap up on the Anthony Rizzo nicknames, and we will crown a winner. We got a lot to go through here. So give us a call now, text right now, 312-981-7200. Get in before we cut it off and start judging here on Picnic. It's Anthony Rizzo night. Stay with us.
Met a man at art, he said he lost his face, said 100 years was way too long to wait, and maybe he'd be better betting on another team. I said, man, you've been hiding out in the dark. They're going crazy out there in Addison and Clark. The Cubs are in first place, and it's not a dream. Let me hear Chicago.
Scream. It says team. Can you hear that? He said, we're going to scream. Let's hear Chicago. And you're like, it should say scream, right? Great music tonight, Sim. Pete Zimmerman coming through with some classics. It is Picnic here. Anthony Rizzo tonight, 312-981-7200. Matt Klein in studio. We are about to come up with a nickname that is going to stick to Anthony Rizzo for really. I mean, it's been amazing, Pete, how many nicknames we have. Do you have the list in front of you that we might be able to share with our listeners, at all the nicknames that we've had so far?
I do.
Should we go through it real quick?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Dexter Fowler, Free Range. Grim Reaper, It's Harvest Time. Hendrix, The Calculator.
I like when a guy's got a tagline.
Javi Baez, Babyface. Hector Rondon, Hectoro. Tommy La Stella, Tommy Gun. Strope, White Castle. Addison Russell, Smooth Criminal. Ben Zobrist, Zorro. Chris Bryant, Roy. Wilson Contreras, Sweet Peppers. Elmora is Whopper Jr. Jason Hayward is the Haymaker. Hamill is Ham Jam. Then we went with Theo Epstein and Joe Madden. They're right. King Midas and Papa Smurf. John Lackey is Big Country. Miguel Montero, Freeze Frame. John Lester, the Bald Eagle. David Ross, Pit Boss. Jorge Soler is Flair. Aroldis Chapman is Chapstick. Travis Wood, Craftsman. Matt Caesar, the Crouton Kid. Mike Montgomery, the Candyman, Carl Edwards Jr., Vitamin K.
Wow. Wow. Now, there are some people, we've said the entire 2016, there's some that we just said, yeah, they're not that big of contributors.
Right.
I feel like there's a few that we've missed there, but it doesn't matter. Anthony
Rizzo.
No, we
got them all.
We got all the ones that matter. We got plenty.
We didn't do Cahill, did we?
No, we didn't. Yeah, we had him on the list at one point, and then we went,
And that's just fine.
Or Joe Smith.
Joe Smith didn't make the cut. Let's go to Michael. Mike, what do you got for Anthony Rizzo?
Scott. Anthony Rizzo, Chicago Riz, the Wiz Kid.
Yeah, the Wiz
Chicago
Kid.
Chicago Riz.
All right, Chicago Riz, the Wiz Kid. All right, I like it. Thanks, Michael.
Amen. Right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so let's see here. Anthony the Assassin, Rizzo, 630 says. Anthony the Hitman, Rizzo. Rizzo in Islam? Islam, I think it's a Rizzo.
Rizzo Islam, yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, Rizzo Islam. Yeah. I'm gonna write that
Rizzo
one down.
Rizzo Islam show Rizness. Anthony Babyface. We just said Babyface is Javi Baez. Mr. Show Riz.
Tony Walk.
Tony the Tuna. Riz the Wizzo.
Tony, I got Tony FOMO from somebody. Fear of missing out. Is that the
no good. And then 312, we'll finish here with they're just a
hey Tony.
Go. All right. How do we feel? We feel good. I got a list of ones. Let's narrow them down for Roger Badish. Here's what I got. Let's see if I got it right. There's a lot of pasta theme here, but we're going to try to limit that as much as possible and get right to what we have. Okay, Matt, you're going to go first. We can see ones you like. We have Cheese Riz.
Mm-hmm.
44 Magnum, Wizzo, Rizzatoni, Ziti, Risotto, Rizzania, and the Wizard. And right. Finally, H to the Rizzo.
And H to the Rizzo.
Which is is pretty damn good.
Did you say Riz Marquee?
I did not have that one in there, Riz Marquee.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I know you're not chanting it at a ball, you know. Let's go, Riz Marquee!
You got what I need. That could work.
Well, that'd be great.
What do you like here? Because obviously we had a ton of pasta stuff, which I think is...
Yeah. You know. Well, Rizzatoni was good. Rizzania was good. Macatoni. You know what? I like Wizzo, just because I'm picturing the Wizzo from...
No.
Yeah, so good. I'm going to go with that one.
Okay.
Because I don't think you're going to allow... Luciano Pavarizzi. So we'll go. I'll go with Wizzo.
All right, let's go. All right, let's go to Pete. All right, Pete, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Do you like Cheese Riz, 44 Magnum, Wizzo, Rizzatoni, Ziti, Risotto, Rizzania, The Wizard, or H to the Rizzo?
I'm gonna go with the pasta theme, so I'm gonna go with Rob and Ziti.
All right.
Can I change my vote to Ziti too?
Okay, you want Ziti?
Yeah, just because Rob was so convincing in his, and you know what? It's right. It is a versatile noodle.
Very versatile. All right, there we go. All right, so let's go to Roger Badish. Roger, are you there?
Yes,
I
am.
All right, I'm gonna give you. A couple here, okay?
Okay.
And first, before we do that, and anyone who gets to win who doesn't work here, if you get yours chosen, you get a pair of tickets to the sold-out Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival on Saturday, September 24th, inside the United Center. The outdoor free festival starts at 8 a.m. The doors open to inside at 9 a.m. The first 10,000 fans to enter receive a Brent Seabrook bobblehead as well. All right.
Can I change mine again back to one of mine?
I'm already leaning.
Your
judge is already leaning.
All right.
Is he wearing only a robe right now? That'd be cool to find out.
And that's what he does, but he does all
got
the
my
traffic.
Wig on.
Yeah, he does all the traffic in a robe. All right. All right, you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Do you like Ziti, Risotto, Rizzania, or H to the Rizzo? And you show your math.
Throw one more in there.
You like Wizzo?
Well, we also have Rizzoli and Smiles, but we're pitching that to the
networks. We've got Cheese Riz. I've got 44 Magnum. Mm-hmm. I've got Wizzo. I've got Rizzatoni. And I've got the Wizard.
Does that give it away?
What? I can't. What,
does that give it away?
Does what give what away?
What give it? I want to hear it.
I'm trying to play it.
I didn't know there were audiovisual cues here.
It's not playing. All right.
You want to hum it?
Well, the lyrics are, it's magic, you know.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Because Wizzo is a...
magician.
Oh.
And Rizzo would be the magician. Wizzo had a stone of Zanzibar that you needed in order to go dooty, 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 dooty. So instead of the stone of Zanzibar, he's going to have the stone of Homa, as in home run. And he'll have the theme song of It's Magic by Pilot. And that's kind of where I'm going with the marketing.
I like it here. I like it.
And so I think that Rizzo should be the magician for the magic that he does with his bat and on the field.
Are you going?
The dude's just magic.
So you're just going with a wild card. You're just
I'm going.
I'm
going off of the Wizzo. I'm going off of the Wizzo.
He went way off the rails. But
no, I'm going with the Wizzo.
Oh, Wizzo. Okay.
Well, I'm going with the Wizzo. But right. I think we can. You know, you got some players on there where you came up with some awesome names, and I think the magician might fit a little better.
All right, so we're saying Wizzo or the magician. We'll have to do a little
Esmeralda. What do you think?
Yeah, we'll have to call her up and see if she'll be in.
Well, you know,
but exactly. But I think Wizzo's good. I mean, I think it plays to the Chicago history. Obviously, the biggest magician of Chicago's, I guess, time, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if magicians will say that, but Wizzo.
Well, you've never broken a tie here. Why don't you?
I know. I feel like maybe I'm the guy.
I think you make the call this week.
I think I will. I will stay with Wizzo.
Yeah.
And I will say that that's a good nickname. I like that. I think the magician is a good play off it, but I think you go, well, let's go Wizzo.
Yeah.
Wizzo, and then people go, why Wizzo? And you're like, yeah. I think
we got a lot out of this today. We got a good nickname in Wizzo, a lot of good marketing ideas. Yeah. We can give away ZD at the game to throw on the field. We've got a great new television show that I'm sure Fox is going to pick up.
Rizzoli and Smiles. And I also think that that's not going to stop. This tonight is not going to stop Rob Martyr from calling.
No, not at all.
Anthony Rizzo ZD for the rest of the season.
No, I'm with you, Rob. I'll call him.
I mean, look, you know, for every Anthony Rizzo home run, please feel free to pick up your free box of Berea ZD at any participating Jewel.
And it's done. All right. So
it makes too much sense.
It's too good. We like ZD, but we're going with Wizzo here. Great night tonight. Anthony Rizzo gets his. Thanks to everyone who participated. And Wizzo's going to get themselves tickets to the sold-out Chicago Blackhawks training camp festival, which is coming up here on the 24th. Matt Klein, good to see you next week. Last week. You ready for Jake Arrieta?
Jake Arrieta. I'm ready. I got some stuff.
You ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
All right. Picnic next week. Thanks for playing, everybody. That's going to do it tonight here on The Download. Patty Vasquez coming up next here on 720 WGN. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN, Chicago and WGNradio.com. Tomorrow night on The Download, Tanya Donnelly joins us from the band Throwing Muses and Belly. Great indie rock, college rock singer-songwriter. Talk to her about her career. She'll be here in the 9 o'clock hour. All right, that's going to do it tonight for us. But like I said, Patty Vasquez coming up next.